Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast contains violence, adult themes, and material that may be disturbing to some listeners. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
True North True Crime is produced on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh nations.
I can't tell you how hard it's been. All that time, you know, it doesn't seem to be getting much better. It's something really hard when you lose your mom in such a way. It's I feel like such a failure that I was not able to protect her. And, you know, I always had that same, you know, the last time I saw her, she was in the window waving at me, and that's the only picture that I have of her. And I wish I could make it right. You know, I've done everything I could. I kept on going as long as I had vacation or weekends. I was going back to Peterborough, back and forth from Mississauga, and I would spend my days searching. And, you know, sometimes I'd have some friends helping me, but most of the time I was alone. And just looking at one point, you know, if everything just seems like it's all the same, you know, because it's just, you're just seeing trees and trails, and you never know, you know, if you're walking 100 feet and maybe you turn around and you were just 3 feet from, you know, where she's at, and you never know where to start and where to stop. And, you know, looking for a needle in a haystack would be much easier, because you know where to look for. But now I've got thousands of square miles to look at. And, you know, I don't know if she's in the water, if she's been buried, if she's out in the open. I have no clue, you know.
On the evening of November 12th, 2014, a 74-year-old woman made her way home from her shift at the local Walmart. When she arrived in her driveway, she was brutally attacked and murdered by a 79-year-old man named Andrew Watson. Andrew Watson was known to the police because Andrew Watson had been stalking the woman for years. After a trial that resembled a circus, filled with theatrics and pretend illnesses, a judge found Andrew Watson guilty of first-degree murder. But to this day, the monster who is Andrew Watson refuses to tell the woman's grieving family where her body is. This is the murder of Lise Fredette. And this is True North True Crime.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 32 of True North True Crime. Thanks for joining us.
As usual, we want to thank everyone who bought us coffee for this week's episode. So a big thank you to Terry B., Sabrina, Jill, Kate, an anonymous donor, and of course, Jonathan Blankus.
True North True Crime is a self-funded and independent podcast bringing awareness to missing people and victims of violent crime in Canada. If you would like to donate to the podcast, you can do so at buymeacoffee.com/TNTCpod. It can be a one-time donation, or you can choose the $5 a month option. If you choose the member option, we'll read your name out at the end of every episode as an honorary producer of our podcast. If merchandise is more your thing, you can pick up some sweet True North True Crime merch at our Tee Public store. We will link that in our show notes.
And lastly, we just want to say thank you to you all for continuing to listen to the podcast. We have heard from many of you over the last year since we began, and we really are lucky to have such cool, compassionate, and engaged listeners. So from both of us, we just want to say thanks. Let's get into tonight's episode.
Tonight we are talking about the brutal murder of 74-year-old Lise Fredette. Evidence shows that Lise was murdered in front of her Peterborough, Ontario home on November 12, 2014. However, her body has never been found.
Lise's family continue to fight to this day to bring her home so that they can have much-needed closure and lay her to rest with dignity. But the monster who killed her refuses to help in any way. We put this episode together using publicly available news articles, including some amazing journalism by Jessica Nesnick, Todd Van Donk, and Frederick Papin. These three journalists were also very supportive and respectful of the family who went through this terrible event. We are grateful that we had a chance to speak with Lise's son, Stéphane Leclerc, who agreed to have his interview with us included in this episode.
So this case takes place in Peterborough, Ontario. Peterborough is a city of about 125,000 people and is located to the east of Toronto.
The city sits geographically on the traditional Mississaugog-Anishinaabeg territory, which is also called Ngogojiwanog, which is the Anishinaabe word for place at the end of the rapids. Peterborough is sort of a bedroom community of eastern Toronto and Oshawa. It is also the gateway to what some Canadians would know as cottage country.
Up until recently, companies like Quaker Oats, General Electric, and other manufacturers employed the people of Peterborough. Crime-wise, Peterborough is a safe place to live with a fluctuating crime rate. Although 2020 saw a rapid spike in crime, probably due to the pandemic and the unemployment that has hit the country.
Lise Fredette was originally from Sherbrooke, Quebec. She had two kids with her former husband. They split up in 1977, but the relationship was amicable. Eventually, Lise moved to Peterborough and started a life there. So in 2014, Lise Fredette was a 74-year-old woman living on her own on Bensort Road in southern Peterborough. Lise worked at the local Walmart on Chemong Road. Lise had a close relationship with her two adult children, Stéphane and Natalie.
Her daughter Natalie describes Lise's home as welcoming, happy, and a comforting place. The family often enjoyed dinners together and seemed quite close and loving. We asked her son, Stéphane, what his mother was like.
My mom, she was she was a great mom. We've never went without, you know, whenever, you know, if we're not rich growing up. And whenever there was some, I was, you know, involved in all the sports and, you know, if there was some trip or if there was anything, you know, my mom was always making sure that, you know, we wouldn't go without anything, you know. So, and she was always involved. You know, I remember when I was going to school or in hockey or in sports, you know, she would always get involved and volunteer and, you know, be part of the, you know, the organization committee, organizational committees, and just, you know, doing it for free just to know what's going on. And, you know, so she did. And even, you know, when at the dance where that's where she met that guy, she was volunteering and, you know, just taking care, getting the food ready and serving people, that kind of stuff. So she was always involved in, all these things, with different committees and volunteering. And so she just loved to take care of people. She was, she always liked to put up some kind of a wall to don't just to make herself appear a bit tougher than she was, but she was always very sensitive and caring. And that's something that I, that I always remember from my mom.
To this day, Natalie and Stefan are fierce advocates for their mother. In 2011, when Lise was 71, she volunteered at a local dance where she met a man who was also in his 70s named Andrew Watson. The two hit it off and began seeing one another. They dated on and off for about 2 years.
Andrew Watson, who goes by Andy, moved to Canada from Edinburgh, Scotland in 1967. His move to Canada seemed very fast and out of character for the seemingly meek and unadventurous man. This move also corresponded with the sudden disappearance of his brother, Frank. In later conversations with Andrew Watson, he refuses to speak about his brother, but he does shower praise on his sister. Investigations into his brother's disappearance have proved fruitless.
Andrew Watson worked as a mailroom clerk for the Department of Natural Resources, a job that he would eventually retire from. Eventually, Andrew Watson would move to Peterborough when he retired. He lived there from the late 90s up until he met Lise in 2011.
So Lise Fredette and Andrew Watson began dating one another. And at first, it seemed that the relationship was going well. But then things began to sour. Andrew Watson was a jealous man, and he would fly into a huff and stop communicating with Lise, only to come back to her, begging for her to take him back. Stefan believes that Andrew lacked the emotional fortitude of a mature adult.
Well, they were having some, argument, and sometimes I think, fuck, is he ever, childish? But I thought, well, he's old, and maybe, my mom was calling him the bachelor, because he was apparently single for a long time. And I thought, well, maybe, being single all these years, that's how people at that age react, and they just become childish. But I never thought that, crazy, that it was not childish, but it was crazy and violent and aggressive. To my knowledge, he never attacked my mom, and I can only imagine that she would have told me, but she never said that he was aggressive or violent with her.
So Andrew Watson would seem to throw these fits and then ask Lise to take him back. This happened a few times over the years that they knew one another. Eventually, in April 2014, Lise made it clear, again, that she was not interested in pursuing any kind of relationship with Andrew Watson. This is when Andrew began to stalk and harass Lise. Andrew would leave vulgar and threatening letters in her mailbox and watch her house from the cemetery across the street. Some of those letters would include the times she went to bed, stating, "I am writing to you because I'm very worried about you going to bed at 1 a.m.
When Lise started seeing a new man named Ben, she received more letters from Andrew Watson, including one where he stated, quote, "I keep wondering how you can have sex with someone you don't love. Perhaps you should sit down and consider how you're going to pay for this lifestyle." We asked Stefan if there were any early signs that would have led him to believe that Andrew Watson was a danger to his mother.
And then eventually she met this guy, Watson. And, I didn't think I was, I'd go and visit my mom on some weekends. And, he was there, and I'd get there, and he always, got up and shook my hand, and he was smiling. We would talk, and he never seemed, always acted normal. And he seems like he cared about my mom. They went on trips, and one time in Brandon, Missouri. And so they did stuff together, and things seems to be going well. But eventually they had an argument, and then he just left and didn't give her any news for months. And after several months, I think she met someone at the dancers, and then that's, you know, she was seeing this other person, and then he came back in the picture and wanted to resume, and my mom eventually, you know, decided to, resume the relationship, and that lasted a little bit, but then eventually, you know, there was another argument, and he took off like this, and the second time he was trying to come back, and she said, no, I can't trust you, and plus at the time, because he was, you know, stalking her and stuff, so she was in contact with the Peterborough police, and they told her, if he wants to come back, just tell him, no, there's no way, and be clear, and that's exactly what she did, you know. She was very clear about not wanting to, because at that time she had met somebody else the second time from the dance also. And so she didn't want to resume the relationship. And I remember she told me on a couple of occasions, he asked her, you know, if that guy, Ben, wasn't in the picture, would we have chances of getting back together? And she told him no, even if he wouldn't be in the picture. There was no chance. And I think that's when, you know, I think he would probably have went after Ben if there would have been a chance. But now by telling him that there was no chance, that's probably when he decided to, do what he did, you know. You know, well, you know, you're thinking about all these things, you know, they just keep on coming back in your mind, huh? You know, all these conversations that I have with my moms, they just keep popping back, and you know, I could be wrong, but I think that's probably the time where he decided to, if I can't have her, nobody will.
So eventually Lise would go to the Peterborough Police Department to report Andrew Watson for harassing behavior. The local cops did take this situation seriously and told Andrew Watson to leave her alone, but the letter still came. Andrew Watson was asked by police to stay off of her street or be arrested, but he continued to harass her. In fact, he showed up on her property on her birthday in October of 2014, allegedly to tell her he was dating someone who lived on her street. So he asked her not to call the police if she saw him on the street that she lived on. Unreal.
On the evening of November 12th, 2014, Lise Fredette finished her shift at Walmart at 8:30 p.m. She made her way home in her SUV. She had to work the morning shift the next day, so she would have been excited to get home and relax. Usually on Wednesday evenings when she worked late, her new boyfriend Ben would meet her at her house to make sure she got home okay. The two would order a pizza and wind down for the night. There is no evidence that Ben was there that night, and as of now, Ben has never said if he was there or saw anything that night. Lise pulled up into her driveway and got out of her car. In her hand, she was carrying her purse and her front door key. The first thing she would have noticed was that her motion detector light did not light up when she got out of her car. It had been unscrewed by Andrew Watson.
As Lise made her way to the front door, she was attacked by Andrew Watson, wielding a shovel over his head and bringing it down like an axe onto the 74-year-old woman.
What I think happened, okay, and I've always had my suspicion, because now you have to know that this happened on a Friday, on a Wednesday night. On Wednesday night, my mom was always working late at Walmart. And so she would come home and she'd pick up, you know, order some pizza. And that guy, Ben, would come and they'd have pizza together on these Wednesday night, you know. So my mom came back as usual on that Wednesday night. And I guess, well, you know, obviously Watson was already waiting for her. And she had a light. Outside light, okay, with a motion detector. So when somebody was walking in the driveway or if she'd back up, the light would come up, come on. But that night, that the light bulb was, unscrewed a little. And that was also part of the evidence where there was some tracks, you know, shoe print in the dirt. Right underneath that light, and that was the pattern. It was detective described it as a fishbone pattern, if I remember well. And when he went to, because the when the went to search his place. They had to put him up in a hotel in Peterborough. And that same detective went to see him one time at the motel, and he said that he had these very same slippers that day when he went, and it was the same pattern that the one that was in the dirt underneath when he unscrewed the light bulb. And so he was waiting for her to come in, probably hiding behind the cedar trees right behind her car. So he came out of this when she came out of her car. She didn't have time to unlock the door or, you know, get inside, because if she would have been able to put the key in the door handle to unlock the door, there's an alarm system that's really loud, and it just beeps very loudly, and there's one of those like speaker outside. So of course, it's an alarm system, so it's going to, you know, go off outside, but it's really, so it would have alerted the whole neighborhood, but she didn't have time to unlock the door, right? So that's when he attacked her, and so there was blood in front of the car, so I think she probably tried to escape, and she fell in front of the car, and then he just, you know, dragged her back into behind the truck, and because there was some, her 4x4, her RAV4. So there was blood on the truck and right behind the truck where he, you know, left her.
After murdering Lise for debt, Andrew Watson wrapped her body into tarps and left the scene of the crime. Only Andrew Watson knows where he disposed of her body. Andrew Watson then went home, where he attempted to clean up his crime. But it seems he got tired in the middle of cleaning and went to bed, because the evidence at his home and in his Subaru was overwhelming.
He ended up, you know, having some tarps, and he just ended up behind, laying the tarps in the backyard, and he just dragged her, put her on the tarps, rolled her in the tarps, and carried her in his truck, because there was blood in the back, in the back of the, because he had a Subaru, so there was blood in the back. There was some of her blood on where the door, you know, on the door frame. But most importantly, and that's something that, you know, I don't know if you've read the reviews on that book, you know, Rough Justice in Ontario, but a lot of people are just referring, you know, there's no body, so he should not have been convicted and this and that, just, you know, which makes no sense because they were not in court, so there was plenty of evidence. But the thing is that, you know, his blood was mixed with my mom's blood on the shifter of his own truck and on the steering wheel, you know. And also something that's quite interesting is that when he attacked my mom, he ended up cutting his hand. He had a deep cut on his hand, and one drop of blood ended up falling right beside my mom's truck, you know, SUV, and that was fresh blood. So the detectives were, you know, took some samples, and they took the sample of that blood, and they were able to match it. And if I remember well, it was 1 in 26 quadrillion chances that it was. So basically that was placing him on in my mom's driveway that night, you know, because there was fresh blood. And the detective that showed up at his place the next day did notice that there was a cut on his hand as well at the time. For some reason, they didn't take any pictures, but the detective mentioned it. And another thing, so basically now that we're talking about this, some people saying that because there was no body, you should not have been convicted. There's pictures that I've got, and if you want, I'll send them to you. Pictures of that blood, you know, his blood next to my mom's truck. And there's also the shovel, you know, and you can see the pattern where because he ended up going home, kept the shovel, and he placed it in a bucket of bleach. And where there's some blood, it's all rusted. And you can see that he was more than likely that he used the shovel as like an axe. And it's an old shovel, so it's very rough. And there's plenty. And plus, you know, in the frenzy, you know, in the moment, it's not uncommon. People do cut themselves. Even it does not need to be a knife, but that. There's a lot of sharp, you know, edges on that shovel. And so that's how he managed to cut himself. Basically, because there was his blood, you know, all over his truck, but mixed with my mom's blood on the shifter and on the steering wheel. Now, when he came back that night, which was apparently around quarter to midnight, he did some cleaning, but... and I'm guessing that he was probably expecting to do more in during the daytime, but the cops had showed up by then, so he didn't have time to finish the cleaning. So he did some cleaning late at night in the middle of the night, but he didn't have time to finish up the cleaning the next day, right?
The next morning, Lise Fredette did not show up to her shift at Walmart. This was not like her. Her coworkers started calling around to see if she was okay. They also called her daughter, Natalie.
That's right, yeah. So Walmart ended up calling around, and they called Natalie. And that's when they said that she didn't show up for work that day. So she tried to call, and she called me also. So I was trying to call my mom, and there was no answer. And so she went to my mom's place and realized that she never got inside the house that night, and her car was in the driveway, and there was blood all over the place. So that's when they ended up calling the police, and the police showed up. And by the time I showed up, it was like 11 o'clock in the morning. So, but she was reported missing around 9.
The police would show up to Lisa's home. City police found Lisa's glasses, her key, and her earring next to her car parked in her driveway. There were 2 pools of blood found in the driveway that belonged to Lise, and there was also a drop of fresh blood that belonged to Andrew Watson. On the side of her car was also blood evidence. Police did not find Lise's soft-shell lunch bag or her purse. We asked Stefan to tell us about that day and to tell us what led the police to zero in on Andrew Watson.
My mom went back to the police station several times because she was having so much time. He would leave, threatening letters and, harassment letters. And he would surveil her from across the street from there's a cemetery. So he would park there. And so my mom went several times back to the police station to report the stalking. So she did. The cops went to us at least once, but I was asking that they would go a second time because he basically didn't care about, you know, they were telling him to stay away. So from my mom, so they went, I know for sure, one time, and they were supposed to go another time in September as well. And so the police, Peterborough police, were already quite aware of what was going on and of Andrew Watson. Yeah, so it didn't take too long. The following morning when we couldn't find my mom, they went to his place right away, you know. And so I came from Mississauga when... I couldn't get a hold of my mom, and at the time I kept on trying to call Ben, the guy, you know, the guy that she was seeing, and I kept on trying to call, and he would not pick up. So finally, after that, I ended up driving to Peterborough. I went to my mom's place, but they already had a perimeter, so I stayed there. Not much that I could. So I drove to Watson's place at the time, and they already had 2 police officers talking to him outside. And so when I got there, I got out of my car, and then he was quite afraid of me. So he told them to keep me away because he was afraid that I'd beat him up. But there was another policeman that just came out and, you know, asking to stay with them, which I did. And I was just paying attention, but I couldn't hear anything that they were saying. They were outside, but at one point he went inside, came out, and he had a book that he was trying to give them. And I could only see the side of the book. I couldn't see the cover, but came to find out during the trial that it was the Innocent Man from, I forget the name of the author right now, but it's a very popular book. Like, you know, he was trying to give that to the cops, but the cops, you know, were with their signing with their hands that they don't want to take anything. So we basically had to keep his book. Like, that would have made a difference, you know.
So the police knew immediately that Andrew Watson was the man responsible for killing Lees. They arrived at his home on Thursday, November 13th, and began searching his home and his Subaru. Inside the car, they found evidence of Lisa's blood mixed with Andrew's blood on the steering wheel and on the shifter. At the rear of his car, they found Lisa's blood outside of the trunk area and on the underside of the car.
Inside Andrew Watson's home, they found a shovel sitting in a bucket of bleach. There was blood evidence on the shovel blade and the shovel handle. There was also a fresh wound on Andrew Watson's hand. The slippers he was wearing had the same herringbone pattern that police found in footprints in the garden below the motion detector spotlight that had been disabled at Lisa's home.
Meanwhile, Stefan, his sister Natalie, and the community searched frantically to find Lise Fredette. On November 22nd, 2014, just 9 days after Lise was reported missing, Andrew Watson would be arrested for the first-degree murder of Lise Fredette. On November 22nd, Andrew Watson was interviewed by police for 3.5 hours. This interview, in its entirety, is available to watch on YouTube.
In this interview, Andrew Watson enjoys a Big Mac meal as he casually converses with the detective. He also complains that his jail cell is uncomfortable and that it wasn't a nice place to sleep. Over and over again, he is presented with the evidence, but denies any involvement in Lise Fredette's murder. It is also quite clear that he believes that without a body, he will not be convicted. Near the end of the interview, he refuses to answer any of the detective's questions and attempts to end the interview multiple times. Here is a clip from that interview.
I cannot answer any more questions at all.
But you can. You absolutely can, because you can make up your own mind.
No, the lawyer told me not even to speak to you, but I've been the kind of guy I am. I don't mind speaking to you.
You've been a gentleman.
So
this evidence supports the allegations.
There's no point in us talking any more about this. I don't know why you would even bother talking to me.
Because I would like her body back. That's why. You know that. That's logical.
Anyway, it's nice talking to you. And no doubt you'll want to talk to me again.
We're not done right now.
Oh, we're not done right now.
No.
Well, I just told you I don't want to answer any more questions. That's all.
That's fine. You can listen. I'm allowed to talk. Maybe you came home and found her in the driveway because somebody else knocked her out and you panicked and you thought, I need to get rid of the remains. Whatever spin you want to put on it, let's go get her.
Maybe it was a home invasion.
Maybe.
Okay. Good for you. You've got it all wrapped up. Why do you keep going on?
Because I would like to bring Lise
back to
her
family. Well,
bring
her back or whatever. Do whatever you like. Just don't involve me. The lawyer told me not to even talk to you. I should have been talking to you all this time.
You're responsible for this.
I'm finished talking to you. Can you not understand that? I don't want to talk to you anymore.
So clearly the police were not going to get a confession out of Andrew Watson. Let's get into the trial after a quick word from our sponsors.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we are back. Andrew Watson's trial for the first-degree murder of Lise Fredette would begin in March of 2017. At first, he chose to represent himself. This resulted in endless delays and frustration, not only for Lise's family, but also the judges and the prosecutors. Eventually, Andrew would be given a lawyer.
Indeed, yeah. Well, he had one lawyer, but he never paid her or anything, so he ended up representing himself. And eventually, he ended up getting a lawyer, and that's how it came about. Yeah, this guy that was representing him. The judges were great, you know, because they did everything. Sometimes it was painful and frustrating because you're thinking, you know, this guy's got more right than we do, and you know that my mom has. But they were just covering all their bases to make sure that he wouldn't be able to come out and appeal, you know. And so he always had, like, a lawyer on standby to consult. And, you know, and every time that he was making a fuss, they were always investigating to no hand.
During the trial, Andrew Watson engaged in seemingly endless theatrics in the courtroom. There were times where he would have emotional outbursts, times where he laid down on the floor. One time he refused to come out of his cell for hours until the judge finally ordered that the court officers bring him out by any means necessary. Eventually, he was carried out into the courtroom on a chair.
They would have seen the complete joke that he was, you know, doing all kind of shit. I don't know if you read, sometime he would just lay down on the floor and just lay down there and just start, you know, talking about all kind of crazy stuff, that they were keeping his adult diapers from him and they were confiscating his notes and all, just, you know, anything to just make it more painful and just, I guess, to get the attention on him, you know. And it was just all kind of crazy nonsense. At one point, he refused to come out of his cell. So finally, the judge told the security guards to, you know, use whatever force, but to bring him to court. But they finally, you know, I think they had to carry his chair. He was on a chair and they carried the chair out. So they didn't, I was hoping they would pepper spray him or something, but they didn't do it. And they just, I think they carried him on his chair. And they brought him to court. But, you know, we were all waiting there for hours for this to end.
Andrew Watson also pretended to be losing his physical mobility. The normally confident and strong Watson would walk into court hunched over and acting like he was a weak old man. This was not true. He also petitioned the court to give him a headset because he claimed he was having hearing difficulties. Stefan is a man who lives with permanent hearing difficulties. He expressed this to me during our interview. He knows what to look for when communicating with other people with a similar diagnosis. Here are some more of Stefan's thoughts on what he witnessed at the trial.
You know, he was not hearing impaired or anything, you know. He never had a problem, you know, because I know what to look for. And when I was talking to him, you know, he never had any problems hearing. It just came out, you know, at the at the trial, just like you, Al, you know, and he was not weak, or just like the way that he would walk, you know, with his back all curved, you know, forward, and like he was 98 years old. That was not the case, you know. When he was walking quickly and carrying garbage, for example, to the street. I've seen him. He never had a hard time if it was doing gardening around the house. So he was not as weak as what he was portraying. And sometimes you'd see it where in court, you know, he'd be walking normally, he'd forget to, you know, about his acting. So he'd be, you know, walking out normally. So all of this was just, that was just an act, you know. Yeah, he was 76, but, you know, in very good shape and strong enough, you know.
Andrew Watson was also very combative with the prosecutor and the judges. He demanded a witness or a body be presented. He truly believed that he should not be charged and convicted without a body. But the physical and blood evidence was overwhelming.
Well, he was not scoring even from the first moment, you know. He was not very likable, you know, and he was always like daring the prosecutor, just like, you know, if you don't have a body, you know, he was daring them to you know, produce a witness, you know. If you find someone a witness, then, you know, I'll go to jail. But so he was basically, what's the word, tempting the prosecutor, because he felt so cocky, so confident in himself, because he knew that he didn't have any witness, I guess, that were willing to talk. Basically, he was just tempting the prosecutor with this. And even the prosecutor at one point during his closing statement, he said that he basically admitted, you know, he was just saying, you know, you can't find any proof.
Neither the judge nor the jury was buying any of Andrew Watson's games. Andrew Watson tried to claim that Lisa's blood on his car, her blood on the shovel, and at his home was the result of a gardening accident that he didn't remember the date of. Again, police found this shovel in a bucket of bleach the day after Lise was found murdered. The police, the prosecutor, and the judge did an exceptional job of finding the truth of what happened to Lise Fredette and securing a conviction.
On April 20th, 2017, Andrew Watson was found guilty of the first-degree murder of Lise Fredette. In the courtroom that day, the theatrics continued. The judge gave Andrew Watson another opportunity to reveal where Lise's body was. The judge stated, "Mr. Watson, the road is now over for you. If you have a heart, sir, I would strongly suggest you speak to put closure to this, so this family can lay this very kind, compassionate woman to her proper rest." Watson then responded, "No thanks." The judge then responded, "Regrettably, it seems to me that Mr. Watson is completely and utterly an empty vessel, concerned only with one thing, himself." The judge would then go on to describe Watson as, quote, "the personification of evil."
The judge then addressed Stefan and his sister Natalie and supporters of Lise Fredette. The judge stated, "It's got to be difficult to hear about how a shovel is found with your mother's blood on it, how blood is all over a car, and you had to hear this preposterous commentary that this came from gardening at some undefined time. Preposterous." During the judge's speech to the family, Watson removed the court's headset that helped him to hear. The judge looked at Watson and said, "He doesn't care."
The following Monday, Andrew Watson would be sentenced to life in prison with no possibility for parole for 25 years. While the family members were reading their victim impact statements, Andrew Watson again pulled off his hearing device and loudly stated to his lawyer, "I'm not interested."
I've never seen, you know, anything like this. You know, somebody with, there's some bad people, but there's bad and there's horrible. And this person has you know, there's nothing low enough for them. These, you know, sociopaths, you know, it's all about the control. Huh? So that's the little bit of control that he has. So that's why he's just, you know, holding on to it, you know. And I guess it means more to him because even the judge, you know, at the end said, you know, I'll even allow you to go back to your place for one last time. And, you know, he was trying to strike a deal kind of, you know, for him to, you know, give up my mom's location. But he was not even interested. So, and you'd think, you know, because at what he was 76 at the time, you know, that he would have thought, you know, maybe a little bit of liberty or freedom or something, you know, that's still better than nothing, because what's good for him, you know, what he's doing right now, that's just, it was not helping, or even maybe trying to, you know, strike some kind of a deal or something, but, you know, just pure stupidity, you know.
We asked a fan to talk about the emotional impact that this trial had on him and his family.
So basically, you know, you when you're going through this, it's just very tiring because it's, you know, they always make sure that they don't upset him and all of this. And you you get kind of pissed off because things, it just drags and drags and drags. And but then looking back after, you you tend to understand, you know, that they had to do this. And and it was a good thing, so that we don't have to go through this over again, hopefully, you know.
Another thing that people may not know is that even after the trial ends, surviving family members still have to be traumatized by the appeal process and the probation system. Stefan is contacted regularly by Corrections Services Canada and updated on Andrew Watson.
You try to understand more the system, because, and I guess more after looking back, you know, you kind of understand, because he's right now he's trying to appeal, and I don't know how that's going, because they inform me of, you know, if he goes for medical visits, you know, because sometimes you have to take him to the Kingston hospital, and so they'll call me while he's going to be absent between, you know, that time and on that day and that time. And they always have a couple security guard with them. So, and sometimes they call me to let me know that, you know, at least a while back, you know, that it was court hearings. So, and I know that he was trying to appeal. So, but I don't know how that's going. You know, if it's, I'm guessing it's still, he's still trying to appeal. But it's just a long process, and my guess is that he's not going to be successful.
Stefan spoke with us about how betrayed he felt by Andrew Watson. Stefan had been kind to Andrew, and then, in return, Andrew destroyed Stefan's family.
What I thought I knew about him was just acting also. You know, he never gave a damn. And that's something, you know, I always felt bad for him because I knew that he was alone, and I've always been afraid, you know. I never wanted to you know, end up, you know, getting old and alone, and you know, that's exactly what he ended up doing. So you know, now I'm alone, and you know, I had my parents. I had my, you know, I've lost my my aunt first, and then the following year it was my grandfather first, and then a month later it was my grandma, and then a few years later it was my mom, and then the year and a half after it was my dad. So within just a few years I ended up losing all the people that I loved and that cared for me, and I was worried about him. I didn't want him to you know, be by himself, and so I wanted to include him in my family. And he ended up destroying everything. And, well, my parents, you know, we were very close because I had an accident back in 98. Well, even before, we were very close, but not as close as after I had my accident. You know, we got much closer. And I would speak with my father and my mom every single night, at least once a day. We'd be talking with my dad quite often. We'd call each other a couple times a day, just talk for a few minutes and, chit chat. And so that was pretty hard when I ended up losing my parents, all the people that I cared so much and that cared for me, about me. And then I end up by myself.
While Stefan received some solace in knowing that Andrew Watson was convicted and sentenced for killing his mother, his mind and his time often drift to finding his mother's body. He believes that there may be some people out there who have some information who may not have come forward. There was an odd incident that was not reported in the news. On the morning of November 13th, before anyone knew that Lise was missing, an unknown man went into the Walmart to ask if Lise was okay. Stefan believes that this man may have been in Andrew Watson's small group of friends.
A couple guys that he would hang out with. And there's one that lived in Omimi. This one is quite the piece of work, so I doubt that he would say something. But see, when my mom disappeared the very first morning, so on the morning of November 13, somebody came to... went to Walmart to check on my mom to make sure that nothing happened to her at the time. And they were trying to trace. It seems like it was the guy that lived in Omimi, but it could be somebody else also. But obviously somebody knew something because they went to Walmart on the following day to find out if my mom was, they were concerned about my mom. So they were already aware that something possibly could have went bad, the following night. The cops tried to show me, they showed me a still of a person walking out of the of Walmart, but you couldn't see the face. You could see just the like the back, because as they're walking, they just look back, and they were looking at, not a cashier, a greeter or someone. So you can see, and it was grainy. So I couldn't make, and I don't know this guy, I know his name, but I don't know his, I've never saw him in person, And so I've been told that it might be this guy, but it could be somebody else also. So we don't know for sure. But apparently there was somebody that was concerned on that morning about my mom. So I know there's somebody else that has to know something about this.
Stefan hopes that if anyone knows something about his mother's whereabouts, that they come forward to help bring this family a semblance of closure.
During Andrew Watson's trial and incarceration, he began sending letters to an old friend in Scotland. In these letters, Andrew Watson complained about the Canadian justice system, the prison system, and claimed that he was wrongfully convicted and being treated unfairly. This prompted his friend, Jimmy Lang, to write a book about Watson titled Rough Justice in Ontario. In the book, the author claims that Watson was beaten in prison and that his trial was unfair due to it being too long. So it's important here to remember two counterpoints. First off, if Watson was beaten in prison, it's important to remember that prison is not meant to be a nice place. And second, if Watson's trial took too long, it was because of all the delays that Watson himself created. People online who have read the book wonder how Watson was convicted without a body. Well, in Canada, you do not need a body for a murder conviction. Also, the criminal stalking charges, coupled with the blood evidence, was enough to convict Watson. No body was needed. Andrew Watson is a murderer.
In our interview, Stefan expressed a lot of gratitude to his friends who supported him through this whole process and to the community who helped search for his mom. We know that many of our listeners will hopefully never know the pain of losing a loved one to murder. We asked Stefan to tell us what it's like to not be able to bring his mother's remains home and what feelings he deals with in the aftermath of his mother's murder.
That's the worst possible feeling that you can ever imagine. There's not a single day that I don't think about this, and that's just, you can't blank it out. It's always there. Whatever happens, you're thinking about something, or and it's always connecting, oh well, my mom was there, And back then, you know, and so you're always, even though you try to avoid thinking about it, that's just something that's just natural. It just comes right back, and you've got all these memories. And like I said, you know, the feeling that you feel like such a failure, that I was not able to protect my mom, even though I was telling her, you know, be careful, always, you know, make sure that he's not around the car before you get out. And but, you know, there's just so much you can do, I guess, but it's just, it never goes away, that feeling, you know. If I would have done something a little bit differently, because even though just my mom's birthday was on the October 10th, and so I went down the weekend after, or you know, a couple weeks after we decided we'd go to a restaurant and so on. So I went to Peterborough, and when I was there, on the Sunday morning, he ended up knocking on the door. Or was it on the, I guess it was on the Sunday morning, and just saying that he would drive on River Road, and because he was not supposed to, but just to come and say, you know, that he would be on River Road because he had met somebody else, and, you know, on his way, so not to call the police, that if we'd see the car, which made absolutely no goddamn sense, because he was in the fucking driveway, you know, coming to say, don't call the cops if I drive by. That made no sense. So obviously he was just trying to make me believe that he had moved on or something. And so my mom got upset at that time, and I went, you know, I walked outside, I went to his car, and tried to tell him to, you know, stop bothering my mom, you know. And fuck, I can't tell you how many times I wish I would have pulled him out of the fucking car and lay a goddamn beating into him, you know. And but who beats up a 76 or 78-year-old, you know? I'm not going to go to jail for something like this, but if that would have saved my mom, I would have gladly done it. And see, that's the kind of stuff that just keeps coming back, running into your mind, you know, over and over again, thinking that that time, you know, I should have been smart enough to realize, you know, he was showing up at my mom's place to say that not to call the cops if he was driving on the street, which made no goddamn sense at all. But you know, you just try to excuse, you know, you never think that people would be, you know, attacking a 74-year-old woman and killing her over something stupid like this. People fall in love and fall out of love all the time, and it's just move on. There's more than one fish in the sea, and you never expect this, but it just happened, you know.
For Stefan and many men around the world, the horrific realities of intimate partner violence against women have come sharply into focus.
And you never expect, I never expected, I was never aware that there was so much violence against, domestic violence and violence against women. Well, I've never been, you know, growing up, I've never seen violence, you know, like this, you know, women getting beat up and murdered and all that craziness. So, you know, when this happened to my mom, that's, you know, when I found out that it was such a big problem here in Canada. And it's usually always somebody close to them. And don't think that you bother anyone, because the work that you do right now is so important that you're bringing some attention and making people aware. And hopefully we can eradicate this kind of, you know, craziness, you know, people attacking women for stupid reason like this and ending their lives and destroying not only, well, they destroy their own life, you know, but they destroy the woman's life, but that guy destroyed his own life. And then all the families that are involved, all the, you know, everybody is suffering over something that could have been avoided so easily. So the work that you do is so important to bring this to people's attention, and, you know, sensitizing people to this kind of issue is the best way to combat it, to you know, inform people and get them to do the make the right decision and seek help if that's what they need, right?
While the physical searches for Lise Verdet have wound down, we asked Stefan if there's anything else our listeners can do to help in his mother's case.
You know, if they know of something, to not be shy, not be, you know, to do the right thing and just, you know, be anonymous, just come out and, you know, whatever piece of information they may have, you know, anything could help at this point, you know. And if they can, you know, provide you with the information and you can relay me, relay the information, if they feel more comfortable to go to the police, but if they feel more comfortable to just come to you, and maybe there's something that we can do with the information, you know, to make sure that it gets investigated properly, you know. Because I can't imagine that this guy did not, you know, slip or say something.
We asked Stefan if there was anything else that he wanted our listeners to know about his mom.
Well, she would be doing the same thing if it would be anybody. She would certainly, you know, do everything that she could to help with that investigation and make sure that we can, you know, give her a proper burial. And, you know, just because right now, God knows she could be in a ditch or she could be in a swamp, you know, just to give her some dignity and some peace, you know, just to bring her home and be able to give her the proper respect, you know, the respect that she deserves. And if somebody can find it in their heart to do the right thing and just provide that bit of information. And, you know, I'm not going to try to find out who they are. I don't care. I just want to get my mom's back, and that's all. And just be able to, you know, put her in the proper place and just know that she's not, you know, in the field or in a swamp somewhere.
There is a Facebook page called The Search for Lise Verdet. We will link that in our show notes and share it to our Facebook page.
In this case, it is clear that Lise Verdet and her family did everything right. She made clear boundaries with Andrew Watson. She eventually went to the police. The police told Andrew Watson to leave her alone. She had a safety plan. She had friends and family looking out for her. But still, Andrew Watson murdered her. In the courtroom, Watson further traumatized Lise's family and friends by engaging in theatrics designed to hurt everyone around him. Ultimately, Andrew Watson's final disgraceful action was to not reveal where Lise Verdet's body is hidden. He is truly the personification of evil, and our society is better without him. We do hold out hope, though, that one day Andrew Watson does the right thing.
We ask that our listeners support Stefan and his family in any way you can. If you are in the Peterborough area and are walking or hiking in rural areas, please keep your eyes open to your surroundings. Lise Verdet is out there somewhere, and she needs to come home. If you or someone you know is a victim of intimate partner violence, we ask that you connect with services in your area.
This was a very emotional episode to put together, and we are so very grateful to Stefan Leclerc for his very raw and honest interview. We are grateful that you trusted us with your family's story. Stefan made a point of highlighting his gratitude towards the officers, the prosecutors, the judges, and the journalists, and those who worked in victim services who helped his family through. We also want to thank our listener, who is a friend of Stefan's. She helped to bring this story to our attention and connect us with Stefan. Our hearts go out to Natalie, Stefan, and everyone who was affected by this crime.
Our producers on the podcast are Amy's Book Reviews, Thomas E., Susan S., Alex and Andrea P., Kennedy, Alberta, Cindy McD., Blair M., Alyssa S., CJ Jeze, Anastasia, Ariel E., Melanie E., Kelly D., Carolyn M., Emily L., Jason D., Jimmy H., Tiffany C., Keith R., Mari M., Lorena, Queen Nebula, Maureen, Jesse DR, and the Missing and Unexplained podcast. We will be back soon with a new episode, so until then, stay safe, everyone.
Stay safe.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.